master violin maker, and Child's Play member, Bob Childs. Maine has a long tradition of violin making and of traditional fiddle music. Our guest today combines both of those. Perhaps you know Bob Childs from his days with the bands Old Gray Goose or Moose Tones. Or maybe you've been to a performance of Child's Play. It is a supergroup of master fiddlers who come together to play traditional Irish, bluegrass, French-Canadian, Appalachian, Scandinavian, and Cape Breton music. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Bob Childs will talk about his own musical journey, the musicians who join him on tour, and our shared musical heritage. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Bob Childs has been making violins for more than 30 years. Among his biggest fans are the members of the fiddle supergroup Child's Play, who named themselves that because they all play an instrument made by Bob Childs. Well, today I'm thrilled to have Bob Childs himself in the studio with me, and we'd love to hear from you. Are you a fiddle player? Have you gone to a Child's Play performance? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. But before we talk today about the music of Child's Play, we're going to get an update from Maine's Secretary of State Matt Dunlap on the work of the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. Secretary Dunlap, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for letting me join.
So, Matt, last Thursday you filed a lawsuit against the panel on which you're serving. What did your lawsuit ask for, and more importantly, have you heard back?
Well, we filed a lawsuit because I've been getting a number of media inquiries over the last couple of months about emerging issues that are being generated by the commission that I was completely unaware of. We had our meeting in September. We built an agenda that I didn't know where it came from. I was not privy to the development of the witness list or anything like that. And then one of our employees apparently was arrested on charges of possession of child pornography, and we have never heard about the disposition of that employee. So I sent a letter saying, what's going on? What's their schedule? And really, I've gotten no response. The only response I've gotten to the lawsuit was really the usual legal response that it's baseless and that they look forward to defending themselves in court. If nothing's going on, that's all they have to tell me, and I'd be happy, but I have gotten no response whatsoever to any of my requests.
Why not just resign from the panel?
Because I think, especially from the work that we did in September, you know, I was challenging some of the assumptions that people were making about what constitutes voter misconduct. And I feel that if I'm not there asking those questions, then no one else is going to. I think it's actually doubly important for me to be there now than it was when I first joined the commission back in May.
So you don't know when you're meeting again?
I don't even know if we're meeting again. I've heard absolutely nothing.
Secretary Dunlap, thanks for joining us. Matthew Dunlap serves on the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity and is Maine's Secretary of State. Well, turning to our main topic today, Bob Childs, welcome to Maine Calling. Although you're based in Cambridge, Massachusetts now, I understand you got your start in Maine.
That's right. I came to work up on the Airline Highway building furniture back in the mid-70s, and I took my violin. I'm a fiddle player, and I took my violin to get fixed down in Orrington to a fellow by the name of Ivy Mann. And Ivy, when I went back to pick up my violin, he invited me to come work with him. And I haven't stopped. That was 1975.
Did Ivy just have a hunch that you would be able to do this? Or had you mentioned to him you were maybe eager to learn?
No, actually, I had no clue. I think he knew that I was a woodworker building furniture, and he had laid out some wood on his bench, and he actually said to me, when are you coming back? He didn't tell me he wanted me to come work with him, and he just said, when are you coming back? And I said, oh, you mean you want to teach me? And he goes, yes, that's the idea. So that's how I got started. And he was, of course, he had been trained by Alvy Batchelder, another violin maker in Maine, who was trained by his father. So I think of myself as kind of a fourth-generation Maine violin maker.
What makes a Bob Childs violin different?
That's a great question. I mean, the thing about a violin that's so hard to explain to people is it's not just the woodworking. It's also your understanding of acoustics and how to make the sound come out of the wood. As a friend of mine likes to joke, it's easy to make a violin. You just take away everything that doesn't look like a violin. So the sound itself really has to do with, I believe, who you are as a person, what you imbue into the wood itself. And that's why I remember working down in Philadelphia. I worked for a shop where we did a lot of the work for the Philadelphia Orchestra. And the violin maker I was training with, I just finished a violin, and he played on it. And he turned to me and he said, "You know, I can tell that you made this instrument. It sounds like you." And that was a great moment for me, realizing that over time, that the instruments that you make really reflect who you are as a violin maker.
Well, I know Maine has a handful of really renowned violin makers. I'm thinking about Jonathan Cooper and you, of course, Bob. Is it that Maine has an unusual number and that it's a particular tradition here? Or is it just that we know about you because we live here?
Maybe it's both, I think, you know, because I think there's people in Maine have a great respect for wood, for woodworking, and a great respect for craft. And so I think this is a great environment. I think when John was training and when I was training, at that point, there weren't any other violin makers around, actually. And in many ways, I feel very lucky to have been the right person at the right time to get trained. And of course, after working with Ivy, I ended up being trained by two European violin makers, because the violin is a very complicated instrument and requires a lot of training.
What's the difference between a violin and a fiddle?
You know, it's really just the way it's played. Fiddle players tend to play on two strings at a time, and they're rhythmically focused. They love rhythm, and it's part of the dance tradition as well, as you hear in Child's Play, and many of the people in Maine know all about the step dancing. But it's really the way it's played, and fiddle players tend not to read music. So I grew up, I learned to play by ear. So you have a different feeling for the music than you do if you play classical music.
When you're building one, are you thinking about the artist who's going to play it and whether this artist is predominantly a fiddler or somebody who plays violin in an orchestra?
Well, you know, it's interesting because most of my customers have been classical musicians over the years. And, you know, I have instruments in the Boston Symphony, the National Symphony, you know, many different orchestras. But being a fiddle player and playing music with different fiddlers, word got out in the fiddle community. So I've been lucky in that I've always had commissions to work from. So I've got to know the person I'm making the instrument for. And, you know, talking about sound is very, very hard to talk about. And the violin is very mysterious to explain how it works. But I can really help a person define what they're looking for in their sound and translate that into the wood. So I love making an instrument, knowing the person and knowing the sound that they want their violin to play.
Oh, it must be a really wonderful collaboration working together.
There's nothing better feeling in the world than to finish a new instrument and turn and hand it to a great musician and then hear it played. I've had so many moments when at my bench when I've just finished an instrument and handed it to the person who's going to play on it and literally be moved to tears to hear the beautiful sounds that can be made on it.
How long does it take you to make one of these custom violins?
A couple hundred hours, usually. It's a fairly slow process.
Is pretty quick.
Yeah, sounds like it, right? No, about 200, and then you know it's a thing. It's a process where you really just basically, if you've done it so many times, and I've finished 160 violins at this point, you get pretty used to the sort of the rhythm of it and the work, and you know that makes me think. I just saying that a little story popped into my head around that Ivy told me that. In order to get into violin maker's heaven, you have to make one more violin than the person who trained you. And Alvy Batchelder had made 98 violins, and Ivy actually made it to 100 violins. And now I'm up to 160, so I've made it into violin maker's heaven. But it's just that idea that, you know, you get used to it and you make a lot of instruments, and pretty soon it's second nature and you're just working intuitively.
Well, let's talk about Child's Play. In Child's Play, this fiddling supergroup, every master musician plays one of your instruments. But one might assume, and I did, that you were a founder of the group. You were not.
No, it's a great story. I was working in the shop in Philadelphia, and I got a phone call one day, and the woman was inviting me down to play in a concert down in Washington, D.C. And of course, I said, yes, I'd love to come. And then before she hung up, she said, oh, by the way, the name of the band is Child's Play, because everyone on stage is going to be playing one of your instruments. And so I went down there. We had such an incredible time playing music together that we couldn't let it go. And here we are. This is actually our 31st year of touring and playing music together.
I can't imagine the feeling of, you talked about one person, one great musician playing your instrument, but a whole group of them. Can you put into words what it's like?
Well, that's a really important question for me as a person. This kind of relates to my personal story, which I'd like to tell people about because it really has a lot to do with the group, which is that when I was young, in the first few years of my life, I was in five different foster homes. And then I was adopted into a really lovely family. But at one point in my violin-making career, I had a dream. And in the dream, I was taken into a customs house as I was crossing into a border of a country. And they walked me back into the house and into the center of the place where there was no windows. And there was a table. And the guard motioned to me to pick up the violin that was on the table. So I picked it up, and inlaid into the back of the violin was an image of a small boy crying. And at that point, it was this incredible realization that the reason I was making violins was to sort of find a way to express some of my own experience that lacked language. And then so imagine that, to be on stage with Child's Play and to be surrounded by some of the best fiddlers in the whole country and having that sound going out into the world. It's a magical feeling.
All right, so we're going to listen to a Child's Play song. This song, I believe, is called Bloom of Youth. So, Bob, tell me about this song.
This is a great traditional Irish tune. And this really reflects
The type of, this is a traditional Irish tune, and it reflects the quality of the creative process of the group. One of the people in the band suggested this as a tune to play, and we put together this arrangement in rehearsals and ended up developing, that was a live recording from last year, just sort of putting this medley together of really great fiddle tunes. In the middle of the set, there's an Irish step dancer comes out and dances away on the rhythm.
So this is, you told me, an Irish traditional song, but you choose from the traditions of several cultures.
Yes, we do, in fact. And, you know, many of those cultures are reflected in the state of Maine. There's some great Irish music here in the state of Maine, and many people had immigrated from Ireland, as well as obviously French Canadian and Scotland. We play all of that. We have an all-Ireland fiddle champion in the group, two national Scottish fiddle champions. We have a French-Canadian set that we're actually doing in our concert tour this year. So there are many traditions that we play that are reflected in the music. But the thing I like to tell people is the music is not just traditional music. It's really alive and well. We're not just playing sort of music from yesterday, from yesteryear. We're actually playing music that's been written by group members, that's based in the tradition, the culture of these different countries, but is really alive, and you can hear it if you come out to a Child's Play concert. You hear a very vibrant, lovely music with all kinds of layers of harmonies and interesting rhythms to create a kind of a very modern sound.
Is there a tradition that you haven't reached out to yet that you would like to?
Oh, well, that's a great question. Well, we're actually doing a gypsy piece this year, which will be very interesting. There's a woman from the Boston Symphony in the band who had brought this Russian gypsy piece, which we're going to perform. So that'll be new for us. It's a pretty neat piece. We're interested in all kinds of music. But at the heart of our music, it's really these sort of traditional Celtic, it's really Celtic music at its heart. So
now, did you start playing Celtic music, or did you start with a different kind and then move into Celtic music?
Well, I learned my fiddling here in Maine, so I learned a lot of traditional Irish music and a lot of French-Canadian music. But when I went down, the violin-making took me out of the state to work down in Philadelphia and Boston. And then there I got immersed in Irish culture, especially, and got to learn all kinds of great Irish music. So I think at this point I consider myself an Irish fiddle player.
What would you say to a young person interested in learning the fiddle? Should one learn how to read music, for example?
Well, it's interesting. I was told by one of the people in the group, who was one of my mentors, Steve Hickman, that what you have to do is you have to listen to music all the time and just get it in your ears. And in fact, I'll tell you a very funny story. I had I ripped my Achilles a couple of years ago. That's not funny. But after I woke up from the anesthesia, the nurse who was there at the bedside said, you know, you're the first person who's ever woken up tapping their foot. And I realized that I had a fiddle tune in my head. So it's like that you just have to kind of get the music inside of you. And I think the best way to do that is to listen to a bunch of music and maybe come out and hear live music. We're doing these two shows this Friday, the 17th up in Bangor, and the 18th here in Portland.
Well, Bob Childs, it's so fun to have you here. If you have a question for Bob Childs, maybe you're a fiddle player, maybe you've seen Childs play, maybe you're lucky enough to have one of his instruments, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can email us at talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Dean's Sweets, specializing in hand-dipped, nut-free chocolates in Portland's Old Port and at deanssweets.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Dee Reese, director of the new movie Mudbound. It's about two families, one black, one white, both poor, in rural Mississippi, just before, during, and after World War II. Reese also wrote and directed the film Pariah, which she says is based on what her life might have been like had she come out when she was 17 instead of in her 20s. Join us.
And you can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Our newest Maine Public Classical station is now on the air. WBQA 96.7 FM, Booth Bay, Brunswick, joins other stations in Portland, Bangor, Waterville, Fryeburg, Bridgeton, and Millbridge down east. The strong 96.7 signal serves the coastal areas from Brunswick all the way up to Thomaston and inland to Augusta. Having said that, 96.7 is also available beyond this area, depending on hills, other obstructions, and whatever your particular receiver setup might be. If you live in areas such as Winthrop, Belgrade, or Manchester, you might want to give it a try. 96.7 FM out of Booth Bay, it may just be your connection to Maine Public Classical.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Bob Childs, violin maker and member of the group Childs Play. You just heard Childs Play playing a tune called Leanne McLean's Revenge. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Bob, tell us about Leanne McLean's Revenge.
Sure.
That's a great name.
That's a great one. That was written by Hanukkah Castle, one of the fiddle players in Child's Play. And it's a great example, actually, of the kind of music that people bring to the group. And as I was saying earlier, this is a living tradition. So Hanukkah is an incredible musician, absolutely wonderful fiddle player and composer. And she also helps out doing a lot of our arrangements for our songs. But that's a piece that she wrote for a friend of hers. And we follow that in the set with a second piece she wrote called The Catchy Bug. And that refers to one time on tour when everyone in the group got the flu bug.
Oh, no.
It was unfortunate, but we all survived and kept playing. But, you know, that's the kind of thing you do with this kind of music. You could commemorate a moment like that.
What tradition, I know it's a contemporary piece, but what tradition would you say that fits into?
That's a Scottish type piece.
That's why the name's McLean.
Exactly.
McLean, yeah, okay.
Exactly. And Hanukkah is one of the Scottish National Scottish Fiddle Champions we have in the group. And so she's a great composer as well.
Okay. We have an email from Owen. Do you make violin bows too? How important is the quality of the bow for making music?
Okay, that's a great question. Typically, I mean, I don't personally make bows, although I did in my training, I did learn how to repair bows. That's a big, important thing to learn how to do. It's a different set of tools for bow making, but the bow is very important. When you finish a new violin, if you take two different bows, you're also going to get two different sounds. Even though the sound of the violin is still there, the type of bow that you use will affect the sound. That's why a really good fiddle player or a good violinist often has several violins and several bows, depending on what color, I like to think of it as a painter, what color palette they want to capture a piece in.
Mm. We'll go to Sarah calling from Brunswick. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. I'm wondering if Bob Charles is still making violins. And did he say that they cost $200, which seems like a rather low price for a custom-made violin? Excuse me.
Well, thank you for your question, Sarah. Yes, I've been making violins for 41 years, so I've been at it for a while. The violins, I mean, I don't know if it's polite to tell you how much they cost, but they cost quite a bit more than $200. It's usually about $18,000. So at this point in my career, having done it for so long, that is actually, in terms of living violin makers, that's kind of in the middle of the pack. New instruments can cost upwards of over $50,000. So that just reflects the kind of training and the experience I've had.
Well, sure. There's no way to make a living off of $200 for 200 hours of work.
No, but I mean, it's a neat question in a way, because fiddle players traditionally, you know, didn't have quite the means that other people had. And so they played on instruments that weren't as good for a long time. But in today's world, I think fiddle players also perhaps are trained classically, and they, you know, they learn the music and they want to play on the best possible instrument they can get. And one thing that's interesting about violins is that all the old violins are known now. They've all been found. Occasionally people think they have a violin in their attic that might be a Stradivarius, but most of the time they're not. And so what really that makes contemporary violin makers important to the world, because there's more violins that are needed for all the up and coming musicians that are developing themselves.
Do you think that you mentioned that fiddle players for the longest time played on instruments that weren't up to their talents? Do you think that fiddle playing is sort of in a golden era now, when it's finally being recognized for the art that it is?
That's a great question. Yes, I have to say yes to that. From my experience in child's play and from traveling around the world playing music, I feel like we've met a lot of people who are really terrific musicians. So I'd say that's true. That does make me think. I do want to tell people about our website, which is Child's Play, just one word, childsplay.org. Because we've actually posted free fiddle lessons. Different people in the group have sat down with a camera and a video camera and recorded lessons, which people can download for absolutely free. Because one of the things about this music is the community that it creates. It comes out of, you know, a culture and a time where playing music was about sharing music. It's not about one person sort of standing out. As very community focused, and we want to extend that tradition into our website. So we've created all these free videos for people to learn fiddling from.
Oh, that's great. Sarah, thanks so much for your question. We'll move on to Dan, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a guitar player and always interested in vintage guitars. I want to ask about vintage or old violins versus new violins, and specifically, how do the properties of the wood change? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Well, if you were to come into my shop, typically you'd see a rack of wood that I've been collecting for the years. And what I've noticed is that if you take an old piece of wood and you break it, let's say you take a strip of wood and you break it, a piece of maple, it has a different kind of an edge. And if you take a new piece of wood, a green freshly cut piece. So what happens is the air drying really allows the cell structures to change in the wood. And when you create a violin and you put the varnish on it, it really maintains that quality of sort of consistency of sound. And then over time, the more it's played, the violin sort of comes to life. And it, they say a violin has a life of span of around 400 or 500 years. And they also, this is another interesting thing, I think, they say that the two things in the world have completed their evolution. One is the redwood tree, and the other is the violin. So they, no one's been able to improve it for hundreds of years. And so as a maker, then, you're really trying to put your signature sound into the wood. But in terms of your question, the wood you start with is very important in terms of the final sound that you get. So if you came into the shop, I'd take a bunch of wood down, we'd tap on it, and I could tell sort of what the final sound's going to be from the wood that you start with.
Mm.
And that's how you develop.
Violins are made sometimes of several different kinds of wood in the same instrument, correct?
Yes. The sides, the neck, and the back are all made of maple and the top of spruce. Typically, the wood is European wood, although sometimes the tops are Engelmann spruce or different kinds of spruce, the same as guitars. Typically, the wood has to be grown at a pretty high altitude. I could go into detail, but
this is really interesting. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, because you want the earrings to grow slow, so it's typically comes from the north side of a mountain, and it's usually cut in the middle of the winter when all the sap's out of the wood, and then you want it to be a slow growth, but you want it to be either maple or spruce.
So will you find this in violins throughout the centuries, that the sides and the neck are maple and that the face is spruce?
Yes, about 99% of the time. I mean, there are other types of wood that can be used. Poplar can be used, for example, some sycamore. But typically, this is really where it is. And again, that kind of alludes back to what I was saying earlier about the violin having completed its evolution. In terms of the quality of sound, if you really want to get a beautiful sound, that you need to start with the right piece of wood.
Well, you know, you mentioned before, and I think even people who don't follow music have heard of a Stradivarius violin. But are there violins between the day of Stradivarius and today that are beloved and well-known among fiddle and violin players?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's many different great violin makers. But the interesting part for me is just to think about all the great contemporary violin makers that are there. There are so many great makers out here in the world today. I think, you know, thinking about Child's Play for a second, what's really cool about Child's Play, I mean, besides what I was saying earlier in terms of being the maker of the violins, is to be up on stage with all these incredible fiddle players. And I think we have a signature sound at this point.
Mm.
That's what's really amazing, is that playing for over 30 years now, and there's a lot of different types of musicians in the band, not just fiddles, as you can tell from the CDs, but we've really created our own sound, and you know, that's what's really special, I think, about the group.
Your players are all master musicians. Do you believe that an individual style changes when he or she plays with a group?
You know, that's a really important point. People come to the group, right? Each one is a star in their own right, and they're touring around the world playing. But they like to come because they like to learn from each other. And I do think their music changes. But people, for example, when we started out, Bonnie Bewick from the Boston Symphony hadn't played any fiddle music, but she got so enthralled with Irish music that now she's actually an incredible Irish fiddle player when she isn't playing at her day job. So, but yes, I think they all learn from each other, and it's really exciting. And they step back and they get an opportunity to grow musically and to learn from each other, which is part of what makes it exciting.
So we're going to listen to another song by Child's Play. This is Moon Dance. Bob, that piece is... Oh, you want to keep playing?
Yeah,
keep playing and see what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. Fantabulous night to make romance, near the cover of October sky.
Now I see why you wanted us to keep going. Tell us about this version of Moondance.
Right, that was a long introduction for the song, but that is Karen Casey singing, who is an absolutely exquisite singer from Ireland who tours with the band. And the arrangement there, especially that you could hear the first part of it, was written by Daryl Anger, who's a great jazz fiddle player and a friend of mine.
You can hear the jazz, yeah.
Yeah, so we Karen wanted to do a Van Morrison song, so we thought we'd do Moon Dance, and Daryl put the arrangement together. But it just shows the quality of the musicians, too. You heard that we can go in a jazz direction, and people can play all kinds of things on it. You heard the harp and the flute and the guitar and just all the different instruments that are part of the band.
Well, you know, this ties into an email from Molly, who says that she and her husband have made a holiday tradition of attending a child's play concert, including the year of the flu bug. She says she's wondering if Bob might reveal who the vocalist is on this year's tour and tell us how you suggest how a child's play selects the singer every year.
Okay, thank you, Molly. That's a great question. So Karen Casey is our singer, and the reason. I like to think about it. If you think of the voice, the violin being the most like the human voice of all the instruments, then at the center of all these violins, I want to have a voice that really has a beautiful timbre, a beautiful quality of sound, and is equally as expressive as the violin. And to me, Karen Casey's singing, she's toured with Solas and Lunasa and many different great groups. She is a beautiful and fabulous singer, and she can really hold her own against the power of 14 or 15 really strong fiddle players. And she is a great spirit, too. She fits right into the band. She's very funny and jovial, but her singing is heartfelt and soulful, and that's what I'm after. And I think we really want to, if people come out to the concerts either in Bangor on Friday or in Portland on Saturday, they will see and hear this beautiful sound of Karen at the center of Child's Play.
Terrific. We're going to go to Smokey calling from Montville. Hi, Smokey. Go ahead.
Hi there. Hey, Bob.
Smokey.
How you doing, man?
Oh, it's great to hear your voice.
Hey, I wanted to relate the story of going to visit, well, more than one story, but going to visit Ivy Mann in his cellar workshop up in Orrington. And when Ivy would take an instrument that had just been finished, like you were talking about earlier, he'd hand it to you and say, play the Steamboat Quickstep.
That's right. He sure would.
That was the tune that initiated each fiddle. So I was wondering if you have a special tune that you'd like to hear the first tune out of your violins.
You know, that's true. I really developed that. And for me, the tune I always play is a tune called The Snowy Path, which is a slip jig, an Irish slip jig.
Okay, there you go.
But the reason Ivy did that is it's sort of like you have a catalog of sounds. And so if you play the same piece at the very beginning of each instrument, it's sort of like spanking the violin, I guess you could say, like spanking a baby to get it to breathe. You want to have something that you can relate to and have a catalog of sounds in your head.
Smokey, are you a musician?
I am, and I own a Ivy Mann violin that I bought when I visited there with Bob many years ago. I think it was about 1977 I bought it from Ivy.
Yep.
What did it cost? $125.
Yep, that's right. Smokey and I have traveled around the state of Maine. I think Smokey and I have probably played music together in every town and city in the state of Maine.
Just about.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. How fun.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. That was, what's Smokey's last name?
Smokey McKean.
Smokey McKean. Thanks so much, Smokey, for calling in. We are going to take another quick break. Before we do, a word about tomorrow's program. Join me for a conversation about caring for caregivers. Share your thoughts or questions by emailing us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can send a tweet or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll be right back.
First, the diagnosis, anorexia nervosa. Then, intensive treatment. Now, the daily struggle of recovery.
Even when I'm doing better, it's like there's chained to my ankle a dead body, and it's there all the time.
For our series Been There, two women compare notes on fighting an eating disorder. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And join us for All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And this afternoon at 2 o'clock, following Main Calling, join us for the Commonwealth Club of California. Today, best-selling author and conservative radio host Charles Sykes discusses how he sees that the conservative movement came to lose its values. That's the Commonwealth Club of California coming up after Main Calling here on Main Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Main Calling. Today on the program, Bob Childs and the Music of Child's Play. Bob has been making violins for decades, and he performs with the group Child's Play. Everybody in the supergroup plays a Bob Childs instrument. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. I understand, Bob, that there is going to be an end to Child's Play.
Yes. So what's happened is we've actually been touring for 31 years, but the ensemble this year is going to be 24 people, plus a big production crew. So it's very expensive to go on the road like this. We are really, really proud of our music, and we've put so much into it. But it's very hard in today's world that there's so much focus on commercial pop music and different aspects of sort of branding music. And our music is much more organic, and it's very, it's sort of an expression of what we're creating. I think of Child's Play as like a kind of creative lab, if you would. But it's been very hard to sustain itself only by our ticket sales and our touring. So I think we want to end it gracefully, and I really want to do it in a way which is going to be really respectful of all the musicians and all the hard work that everyone's put into it, as well as for our audience. And so we're touring this year, and then we're going to tour on the West Coast next year, and then in 2019 it'll be our farewell tour. And we're going to film that, and we did have a film on public television, actually, for the last couple of years of the group. But this will be kind of a farewell tour, and we're going to try to capture the legacy of the group.
And for this year's tour, I understand you're going to go into the studio after the tour, correct?
That's right. We're going to be playing in Bangor on Friday, and then down in here in Portland on Saturday. And then in January, we're going to go into the studio and make our last CD. And we've actually just started a Kickstarter campaign. If people go to our website, childsplay.org, they can help us sort of fund that CD. But the goal is really to capture the legacy of the group. And this will be our seventh CD, believe it or not. And we've had a great time. Each one has sort of captured a different era of the group. And this will be really focused on Karen Casey's singing and really the maturity of the band and the sound that's evolved over all these years of playing together.
Great. We'll go to Tim calling from Waterville. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you today?
Great.
I've got a question for Bob. Just recently, I was watching an interview with David Bromberg.
Oh, yes.
And he talked about the time that he walked away from performing and walked away from music for about 20 years. And what he did is he became a student of violin making, but also I understand quite an expert in violins. Have you ever had any interaction with him?
Yes, I have, actually. He came into my shop probably 10 years ago. And I've actually had a chance to play with David Bromberg, too. John Cooper and I backed him up on one of his gigs here in Portland. But he's a great musician. Whatever he does, you know, he's one of these people that he has so much talent, he just has to find a vehicle for it.
Tim, thanks so much for your call. An email from Molly. Does Bob mentor other violin makers? I'm also wondering if Bob has a child or family member who might be showing interest in becoming the next generation of violin maker. Are you somebody else's Ivy?
You know what? I haven't done that. I do have a couple kids, and they come into the shop, and we've made cars and airplanes and things like that. But I don't know if they're going to be violin makers or not. I haven't really pushed that on them. But there are schools of violin making. When I was training, there weren't schools. You had to do apprenticeships. And so I did apprenticeships. But now there are three violin making schools in the country, and obviously in Europe as well. So you can get trained that way.
Oh, interesting. An email from Kevin. Kevin, emailing from my shop in Freeport. I just had a customer in my shop, and we were talking about the struggle between sports and violin lessons. Can you say something to parents to help inspire them to keep their children playing and practicing? I don't think that this question is just for the parents of violin playing students either. I think we've got you could substitute piano or flute or trumpet.
I wouldn't consider myself an expert in this area, but I would say this, that to me, the great joy of playing music is playing with other people. And I think for kids who are learning, I think if you're just playing and practicing by yourself, I think we all know, we were all once kids, how hard it is to practice. But if you get with other kids who are playing and you start playing music together, I think you really see the joy in the music. And I think that is really the secret to longevity of playing. And that would be my only advice I'd give anyone around that. But I do want to say also, extending that into Child's Play, that I think when people come out to the show, they're going to see the joy of playing music together. And I think that's one of the things that people have often come up to me after a performance, and they say, you know, just that we really conveyed this beautiful joy of music. And, you know, I like to tell people there's nothing cynical about Child's Play. Like in the modern world, there's a lot of things we could be cynical about. But when you come out to hear a performance by Child's Play, you're going to leave moved by the music. And really, at the essence of music is really this joy that we're trying to communicate, that Kevin's asking about.
We'll go to Carol in Cumberland. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. And I don't know if you answered this question or discussed this before, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And with an additional one, the difference you're referring to a violin, fiddle, are they the same? Is it how they're played? But also, you as the maker, does one, when you make one of them, do you think, this is going to be a fiddle one, or this is going to be a violin one?
Oh, that's good, Carol. I like that. Well, here's what I would say. Someone else asked me this recently, and I like to say, I think the difference between being a fiddle player and a classical player, and of course, I'm a fiddle player, so I'm going to say this, but the difference is that fiddle players play the music from the inside out, and classical musicians or people who read notes play from the outside in. And I think that's really the biggest difference. I think when you become a great musician, whether it's classical or fiddle, you're playing it from the inside out. But to me, there's no difference when I make an instrument. I'm going to make the best instrument I can possibly make, because I want it to last. Obviously, it's going to be living much longer than I am, and I want that legacy to live on into the world. So I make the best instrument I possibly can.
Bob, earlier in the program, you mentioned that traditionally, fiddle players don't read music and classical players do, but that's changing now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, so many more people, because of the advantage of the internet and obviously computers, you can learn music, obviously, from all around the world. But also people are getting trained classically. A lot of the people in Child's Play, even though they're great fiddle players, probably learned playing classical or Suzuki method. I myself did not do that. I just learned by ear. But many, many people, up-and-coming fiddle players, start out with that. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, in fact, because the violin is a really hard instrument. It takes years of playing and to really get over the hump where all of a sudden you start to enjoy it. And I think that's where Kevin's question was coming from.
You mentioned that the violin is considered the closest to the human voice, and also talked about the emotional experience of being at a Child's Play concert. Whether it's a violin or a cello, what is it, do you think, about the stringed instruments that sort of reach into your soul and pull something out?
Okay. I think there's two parts of this answer. The first one is, I think it has something to do with the mysterious element of the violin. You know, I think we live in a world that's so data-focused and so specific and so tangible, concrete, and material. I think the violin speaks beyond that, sort of the material world. It speaks to the essence of music. And I think this is the second part, which is has to do with the sort of the nature of our souls, I guess you could say, or the quality of what it's like sort of outside of our logical intellect, our minds, is that, you know, I think we all yearn to touch the mysterious part of the world and the mysterious part of life. And I think the violin and I think music itself, when it's played really beautifully, does that for us. And it sort of takes us out of the kind of the day-to-day world and transports us to a really magical place, which is there all the time, but you have to find a way to get there. And I think music can provide a great vehicle for that.
We'll go to Roberta, who's calling from Gray. Hi, Roberta. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Oh, it's so nice to hear Bob Childs on today. My husband and I have gone to, we've gone to three Child's Play concerts in Portland. And just to reiterate what Bob has said, I don't know what happens during one of those concerts, but it's like you become a witness to something that's happening that you cannot put your finger on. It has just been, it's been such a joy for us to go, and listening to your program, I just heard that there's going to be, it's going to end, and I have surgery this Thursday, and my biggest, the thing I'm going to miss most is going to that concert this Saturday. But they're wonderful concerts. They're amazing, and I don't know what happens, but something happens, and it's just wonderful. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Roberta.
Roberta, thanks for calling.
Yeah, that's really lovely to hear. I mean, it means a lot to me to have someone say that, because we really work hard. Like, we're in rehearsals right now, and we're trying to imagine this tour and imagine this concert coming up. And, you know, the audience is equal. It's funny. I never thought of this before, but, you know, the violin is only half the story. The other half is the player. But when maybe another way to say that is kind of what Roberta's alluding to, which is, the musician is half the story, but the audience is half the story. And there's something really beautiful about the responsiveness, about the audience who really get locked into what we're doing and are just there breathing with us and hearing the music and just feeding back to us what we're doing. And I think without the audience, music would be a really empty experience. So there's something beautiful about what she's describing.
So I have to ask you this. You're talking about the warmth and the beauty and the feeling with all these master musicians in the room. Is there any competitiveness? Is there any sort of devil went down to Georgia trying to outplay each other?
Well, I wish you were at rehearsal yesterday. There was a lot of joking going on about that.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. But that's, you know, that's part of the fun. Because, this is a hard thing to describe, but, you know, everyone is a superstar in their own right, but everyone sort of checks their ego at the door to make space for this bigger experience. That doesn't mean there isn't competition and they don't give each other a hard time and there's a lot of in-jokes and things like that, but that's part of the fun of it too. It's really about enjoying it and having fun, so I have to say, yes, there is some competitiveness, but it's all in good spirit.
Okay, well, on that note, we'll play one more clip, or maybe the second to last clip. This is Black Diamond Polka. That doesn't sound like any polka I ever heard.
That's what I call the wall of sound. That's what happens. You get on this wave and you ride it. That's a piece that Keith Murphy wrote, who's the guitar player in the group. It is a polka, but it's a very fast polka. But that's the kind of the signature sound I'm talking about, where you get to hear that there's a melody, there's harmony, and there's really this incredible rhythm underneath it, which really makes it very modern. It's not just a traditional polka tune. It's a very modern feel to it. And it just shows you how alive and well this music is.
How do you choose when you're trying to figure out what's going to go in the concert with all these incredible composers, all the traditional music from the different traditions that you're picking from? Do you kind of have a theme when you go into a concert, or are you aiming for variety, or what are you thinking about?
Well, I'm the artistic director of the group, so I sort of have the final say in terms of what we get to play. But I invite everyone to send me music and send me ideas. And over the course of a few months, we have a lot of conversations about what we're going to create together. This year's theme is really Celtic focused, and the new album we're going to make in January is going to be Celtic focused, because having Karen at the center of the group, Karen Casey's voice, we really want to create all these beautiful sounds around her. So it'll be very Celtic focused, but again, it's going to be a lot of original music, and even the songs, the traditional songs, we're actually going to do a Joni Mitchell song this year with Karen. It's still going to be, the feel is Child's Play, and it's because people in the group are arranging it, and over the years, we've really developed a quality of sound.
We have an email from Eileen asking if you're familiar with Bill Stevens of Interior, Alaska, who's a Gwich'in Indian elder fiddle player.
No, that I don't actually. But interestingly enough, I did become friends. Smokey and I became friends, who called earlier, with a Penobscot Indian chief by the name of Neil Tomer, and I used to go up and visit Neil up in Moosehead Lake, and he taught me some of his tunes. And the Penobscot Indian, the Aboriginal cultures, Indian cultures, have a lot of great fiddle playing, and. Chief Tomer was somebody who played fiddle all around the state of Maine back in the 30s.
How would one, what is a Penobscot traditional Indian fiddle player, what would it sound like? Is it comparable to another tradition?
Yeah, I mean, it has its own unique rhythm, right? Like every culture, like the French Canadian rhythm is unique, the Irish rhythm, the Cape Breton rhythm, they're all unique. But at the heart of it, it's still fiddle music. It still has a feel of a fiddle tune, and it's danceable. It has a great rhythm to it.
Have you followed the movement in sort of the modern folk bands that are popular on the radio these days that really do embrace some of the more traditional elements?
Yeah, I'm happy to see that. The Americana music is what I think you're referring
yeah.
to. I really love that too. I think part of that is, you know, that there's a lot of rhythm, drums and sort of electric instruments incorporated that's merging with the traditional folk. And I mean, it has to keep evolving and developing. So it doesn't surprise me. I think at the heart of it, we really feel like we have our own sound, our own style of music. And we've been living here a long time in terms of that sound. So, if people come out this weekend, Friday and Saturday, to hear our show, they'll really get a feel for what we've been doing. And you can get tickets on our website, childsplay.org.
Well, and you're hearing some of that music in the background right now. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today. Bob Childs is a luthier and the artistic director of the group Child's Play. As he mentioned, Child's Play will be performing in Bangor November 17th and in Portland November 18th. Visit the Maine Calling website or Facebook page for more information. We're going to go out today with a little more from Child's Play. This is Bloom of Youth. John Keimel ran the board today. Owen Manahan answered your calls. Additional help from Roddy Nickpour. The show is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.